The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. School is now in session. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Mark Durkin.
Hey, teacher, leave them kids alone.
Well, good evening, and thank you for joining us here on Education Nation. I am your headmaster and host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and it's a privilege to join you every Saturday evening here on AM 1280 The Patriot. And, of course, I am joined in studio once again with my wonderful producer and co-host, Mark Durkin.
Another good evening. How are we doing this week, Rebecca?
We are doing well.
Yes.
We are doing well. We're well into the fall here.
It is. It's a whirlwind. I mean, the time is just flying.
Yeah.
I mean, like a week ago, there were no changes to the colors of the leaves out there. Now everything's red and yellow.
Yes.
Nice.
It's starting to finally be beautiful.
It is.
Right? Well, it's often been said that today's young people don't know how to think critically or write well. No Red Ink is a web-based platform that's designed to improve students' grammar and writing skills. And in 2017, they analyzed more than 213,000 students in 6th through 12th grade and found that half of the students had difficulty doing the following tasks. First of all, evaluating undeveloped and undefendable claims. Secondly, identifying arguments that don't progress. Thirdly, making logical deductions. And fourth, distinguishing between claims, evidence, and reasoning.
Yes, and the average person that thinks about and attempts to think critically and to write, they don't think along the lines of these aforementioned points. The fact is, each of the above issues characterizes good writing skills and when there is a good grasp on logic. Mm-hmm. The problem today is logic is rarely taught in today's schools.
Right. Which, by the way, it used to be taught. Regularly, mm-hmm. Yeah, but no longer. So this evening, we want to discuss some of the crucial benefits that come with having logic as a part of a school curriculum. How does one teach logic? What are the laws of thought? What are fallacies, and how do they serve as pitfalls in the art of argument? Joining us in studio to discuss logic in a classical education curriculum is Brent Fisher. Brent teaches logic to middle school students at Liberty Classical Academy, and he also teaches the Gospels to ninth graders. He's also the school's new spiritual formation coordinator and biblical counselor. Brent was a guest on the program several years ago, and he joins us again tonight. Brent, welcome back to Education Nation.
Great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And I might add, you also teach 10th grade Pentateuch.
That's correct.
Right? So two Bible classes. Yes, you're a very valuable teacher at Liberty. We're thankful to have you.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
So what is reason, Brent, and where does it come from?
Yeah, well, excellent question.
just a simple question to start off with.
We could go very deep into that one. Well, simply, reason, the definition I give the students is that it's being able to draw proper conclusions from other information. So let's say it's raining outside, and I say, if it's raining outside, you should probably bring an umbrella. And then I say, it is in fact raining outside, and therefore you would conclude what?
You should have an umbrella.
Yes, exactly. Good job. See, that's because you can reason. Mm-hmm. So another way to talk about reason is it's your ability to draw inferences. So if you're given certain information, like the Twins are going to play the Yankees in the playoffs, and they have historically choked in that event. And then I say, well, guess what? They're playing the Yankees again this year in the playoffs. You can conclude they're probably going to choke again.
Choke,
And as every Minnesota Twins fan knows, don't get your hopes up because no matter how good their record is, they're just going to break your heart.
Their way.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Seems to be true of most of our Minnesota
sports
teams.
Minnesota curse. <Yep. laughs> Anyway, so that's reasoning. It's your ability to infer proper conclusions from other information. To answer the second part, though, of that question, where does it come from? You could say it just comes from the fact that we are humans and we have this ability to reason that goes far beyond even the smartest animal. Mm-hmm. We can think several steps down a logical sequence in a way that, that animals just can't. Mm-hmm. A fun way to put it is we have this sense of the sense by which we sense what we sense. And I know it's a lot of senses. But so we know that when we're smelling something, it's the sense of smell that we're using. A dog does not know that. Mm-hmm. A dog knows it's smelling something, but it doesn't know that that sense is called smell. Mm-hmm. You know, so language is closely related to this as well. So we have this almost fifth sense behind our, or sixth sense behind our fifth senses that we can differentiate between our senses, and we can think like at a higher level and behind all these things about what we're actually sensing and make judgments based on them. Mm-hmm. And that's the philosophers would say that's what makes us different than the animals, and actually essentially one of the essential elements of what makes us humans. Mm-hmm. So I guess in the biblical view, it's part of what makes us made in God's image,
right?
Because God is a reasoning being. He has a mind, and therefore we have minds that can reason as well. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, interesting. Well, now that you've defined reason for mm-hmm. us in actually a pretty... I'm pretty impressed that you're able to define reason in that short little period of time. What do you think the term logic then means?
Yeah, so again, we could go deep into this and where logic comes from. But logic is just connected to reason in the sense that one definition we use with the students is it's the science and art of reasoning mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. So we all reason. The issue is, are we reasoning well?
Right.
And logic is kind of the science of that, of, and it's the art as well. And we use that definition because there's two primary branches of logic. There's formal logic, which is more the science part, very precise. And then there's informal logic, which is more of an art and everyday thinking mm-hmm. type of thing. So.
Right. Good.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, in God's pleading with Israel, of course, in the Old Testament, he wants us to reason well. He says, come, let us reason together.
Yes. I love that passage. Thanks for bringing that up, yeah. Mark, because then he says, though your sins be as scarlet,
yes,
they shall be as white as snow.
Absolutely.
So he's calling Israel there to reason yes. about his own forgiving mercy. And then it's, mm-hmm. of course, prophetic of the Messiah, and
right.
we see now,
yeah.
you know, we're reasoning about Jesus in the gospel.
Absolutely.
And that's just a beautiful combination of those two things. So.
Mm-hmm. It most definitely is. Now, you just touched a little bit on formal and informal logic. Let's maybe go a little deeper on
yeah.
that. You know, what is formal logic and how does it relate to reason?
Sure. So formal logic really it's helpful because it's studying the form of an argument,
sure.
really, and you can talk more about the different types of formal logic. But really, what we're getting at is deductive arguments such that the premises necessarily imply the conclusion. So, for instance, going back to our example, if it's raining outside, you should wear or you should have an umbrella, and then I say it's raining outside. The necessary conclusion that you would draw from that and right reasoning would be I should bring an umbrella.
Right.
And so that's a necessary conclusion given that the premise is true. And so this really gets into syllogisms and what's called categorical logic. Classic example is all men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Therefore, Socrates is
mortal.
Mortal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a necessary inference and conclusion given the premises. And so what we do in formal logic is we study these syllogisms and how do you write statements in a categorical way based on how kind of Aristotle started as the father of logic, these categorical statements, such that when you put them together, there are certain forms that the conclusion always necessarily follows given the premises. And the one I gave you would be one example, and they all have different names, you can write them out. So that would be an AAA1 mm-hmm. syllogistic form. Mm-hmm. And there's 24 valid ones so that no matter what you plug in for the terms, the conclusion is always going to be what's called valid. Mm-hmm. So we could say all whosits are whatsits and all whatsits are whatchamacallits. Therefore, all whosits are whatchamacallits. And that's necessarily true if the premises are true. Even if we don't know what a who's it or whatchamacallit is, mm-hmm. right? So we can use then just symbols, SPM, to represent the terms. And regardless of what SPM stand for, if the form is correct, the conclusion is going to be correct. And then what we do is after that, you can look, well, are the premises in fact true in reality? You know, are all who's it's in fact what's it's, you know, and that's what you get into more with informal logic. So maybe we did you want to talk about that or
absolutely.
Okay.
You just led right into the question.
So formal logic is fun for those who are really black and white in their thinking and they like things very clear.
That's
there's no
me.
Gray areas, which is very nice. You know, I like that too. You know, either in formal logic, either an argument's valid or it's not valid. There's no middle ground. Either the form's valid or it's not. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to informal logic, when we're looking at primarily not the form of the argument, but the content of the argument, then things can get a little less black and white, a little more gray, because now we're looking at language, we're looking at meanings behind words, and how those can get be very complicated.
Right.
So this is the art of logic, if you will, everyday thinking. You know, so if you were to give an argument where, you know, you say all these types of people are like this, then you need to say pause and say, well, what do you mean that they're like this? Mm-hmm. You know, and you can't just go straight through the form of their argument. And the other reason is because most people just don't talk in syllogisms every day. And and so what we have to do is try to gauge the strength or weakness of a person's argument, the soundness of a person's argument, even if we might not be able to represent it in a given form. And so as we say in formal logic, there's valid and invalid. But in formal logic, it's strength or strong or weak when it comes to arguments.
So is it stereotypes and personal bias that kind of contribute to the gray matter?
Yes, very much so. Yeah. Our own interpretations of things, our own, you know, personal subjective feelings, experiences, et cetera. Mm-hmm. That's where the human element really, really comes into play a lot there.
Okay.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I'm sure that the students probably like the informal logic more than the formal.
Yes, you're right about that. There's certain ones that are, you know, the more mathematical types that really get into
the math. Kids who like the formal.
Yeah, but informal is where things get really fun, because then you start realizing that everyone's using logic all the time, and most of the time they're not using it well.
Right. Lots of fallacies.
Yes.
We're going to talk about that a little bit later too.
Mm-hmm.
There's something called the laws of thought.
Yes.
What are the different laws of thought?
Yeah, so laws of thought is one way to refer to kind of the three basic laws of logic upon which everything else is built. So Aristotle would say that you know, all of logic really stems from a few certain principles. Mm-hmm. He would even say one, but you can break them down into three, and they're interrelated. Mm-hmm. The first would be the law of identity. So that's just saying that whatever something is, it is. So, you know, I had a philosophy professor, and he would say, an apple is an apple is an apple is an apple, or a rose is a rose is a rose is a rose, right? Mm-hmm. If it's a rose, it cannot not be a rose, and that leads to the second one, which is the law of non-contradiction, right? So a thing cannot be both true and not true at the same time and in the same sense. Mm-hmm. So this water bottle here cannot be both a water bottle and not a water bottle at the same time, in the same sense. And those two qualifiers are very important. So I always say to students, you know, here's Billy here. What if I said Billy is here right now, but he's also not here right now? What do you think I mean? And they usually get it. Well, he's here physically, but he might not be here mentally, you know. And so there's different senses of that. Or or Billy is in logic, or Billy took logic class. Well, he's not taking it now, but he could have taken it at a different time. Mm-hmm. And so there's also different times that things can both be true and not true. So those two qualifiers are very, very important.
Okay.
And then the third is just the law of the excluded middle, which is basically saying either something is true or it's not true. So either this is a water bottle or it's not a water bottle. And there's no real gray areas. And that gets into, you have to state something as a statement, not as an opinion. So either this is a table or this is not a table. It's either true or false. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the Christian worldview, you'd say either Jesus is Lord or he's not Lord. Mm-hmm. When he makes the claim, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth, that's either true or it's not true.
Yep. There's no gray area.
There's no gray area when it comes to statements. And that's another thing that, you know, it's really nice about formal logic.
Mm-hmm.
See, there is truth, and then there is error.
And that's one of the reasons why we think this is an important subject at Liberty, is not just so that they can become good thinkers, but to help them understand that the claims of the Bible are claims. And you really have to either reject them or accept them as truth. And if you accept them as truth, then there's a lot of consequences that come from that.
Yeah.
In a great, great consequences. Mm-hmm. But you can't, there's no gray area on that.
Yeah. So. To wrestle with the claims of Christ on their own and really think through, do I believe this?
Or not.
Why? Mm-hmm. Or why not? Mm-hmm. And then to actually rationalize your position. I mean, that's what really matters. And we as Christians believe that, you know, we're not fideists, and we don't just, it's just not blind faith. We have reasons for believing what we believe, and good reasons. And, and it's important for us to know those.
And of course, Jesus helps us in that when he says, you're either for me or against me. Again, no middle ground.
Yeah.
Jesus,
he's
always using logic if you read him carefully. Mm-hmm. So,
Well, given these laws of thought, Brent, truth from falsehood is equivalent to that which is black versus that which is white. Can you share with our listeners why it's always appropriate for logic to give way to mystery?
Yeah, that's a good question. In light of what we just said, we can have as many reasons to believe or not to believe something as we want, but at the end of the day, we can't know everything. And so there's actually a fallacy about that, that it's a fallacy of you have to know for 100% certain whether something is true, like in mathematical certain terms, otherwise you can't believe it. Well, that's just not life. Mm-hmm. When it comes to everyday life, we make decisions based on trust, and those the things we trust, we have reasons for them, but they're not all the time 100% certain. And that's because we are just fallible human beings. Our perceptions of things are not always correct, and we're also I guess I could say theologically we're sinful, so there's our brains just naturally have something that rebels against truth, especially spiritual truth. When, you know, as Paul said, I just read it to students the other day from 1 Corinthians, you know, the natural person does not accept the things of God. They're folly to him. Mm-hmm. And so there's true things in the universe that are like the sun, you know, at noonday, just bright and shining, yet people are turning their eyes away because they don't want to believe it. Because they want to be, you know, their own kings of their own world. And and so sin affects our ability to reason in a way where we can't, we don't necessarily want to believe certain truths. And so that's just the bad side of it. But even the positive side of it, we have to give way to mystery. You know, Jesus says, trust me. He doesn't say, here are mathematical reasons why you should trust me that are 100% accurate. Mm-hmm. You know, just says, follow me.
And we have enough truth to understand and know where that should help us to be able to trust the things that we don't
know. And we have sufficient, reasons.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, since we're on this topic of fallacy, describe the three fallacy arguments and highlight maybe one popular argument from each category just to kind of give our listeners an example of each one.
So I wish we could have a whole
show on this alone.
Several shows, because we go through about 70 fallacies in informal logic, and there's logicians break them down into different, you know, categories and classes. We talk about four big classes. So you have, or families of fallacies. We talk about fallacies of relevance, fallacies of presumption, and fallacies of clarity. And the last is fallacies of civility, or civil fallacies. So maybe I can just give a couple examples of each of those. So with fallacies of relevance, there's a ton of these. Most fallacies, in fact, are usually fallacies of relevance. The most common one that everyone should know is the ad hominem abusive fallacy. So maybe I should backtrack. So fallacies of relevance are basically when someone just attacks something that's not directly relevant to the person's argument. And the way ad hominem abusive fallacies do this, and the Latin means to the man, you know, attacking the man, is they attack the person's character instead of the person's argument. You know, instead of going after the content of what the person's actually saying, they go after the person and who is actually saying it.
This is happening all over the place
today. All the time. And it's the playground bully fallacy. It's the name-calling fallacy. There's different nicknames we give it. But it's basically It's the age-old tactic of, I can't deal with your argument, but I'm just going to call you a jerk. Mm-hmm. And then everyone's going to hear that and think you're a jerk. Mm-hmm. And that's all they're going to think. And so it's a way of, you know, throwing stinky stuff at someone so that everyone thinks that person stinks and they don't even think about their argument at all. Right. And so politicians do this all the time because they know the masses don't like to think. And you put a label on someone, all of a sudden that's all they know.
Right.
You know, someone's racist. Well, I don't know what their argument is, but that he's racist because they said so. And so that's a huge one. Another big one to mention here is the Bulverism fallacy. We spend several days talking about this because this is really dangerous. Bulverism fallacy is named after a fallacy coined by C.S. Lewis, as a matter of fact, and he was talking about the advent of Marxism and how Marxism breaks all of society down into various classes and then tries to explain all of our behavior based on those classes. So a Bulverism fallacy is basically saying a person only believes what they do because of their group identity. So Mark, you only believe what you do because you're a man, you know, or you only vote for Trump or whoever because you're a Republican, and so we use it with political classes a lot. Or you can't talk about so and so issue because you're a white male or something, and we use that all the time, and that's so dangerous because what you're doing is you're basically getting rid of all reason. And saying that all that matters is group identity. And so this is where the term group identity politics really comes from. And politicians do this all the time. You know, well, you can't talk about that because you're this, or you only believe that because you're this.
And it's all stereotyping.
It's all stereotyping, and it does away with all reason altogether. Mm-hmm. That one's really dangerous. Appeals to emotion, where you put feelings over facts. There's a bunch of those. Appeal to fear, appeal to pity. Red herrings, so you have the straw man fallacy where you misrepresent someone's argument. Let's see, a couple
simplify
others. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The false bifurcation where it's just all or nothing categories, black or white. Another big one when it comes to fallacies of presumption is the Pomo relativism fallacy. So we talk about this a lot, the belief that all truth is relative. And it's all just a matter of personal opinion, personal taste, subjectivity. That one's really dangerous because if you believe that, then anything goes, really, and what's right becomes who has the most might,
right?
Who has the biggest stick can just enforce whatever they want because there's no real truth anymore.
And they're treating that as an absolute truth,
exactly,
by making that relative statement.
Self-defeating. Mm-hmm. You know, there is no absolute truth. Is an absolute truth statement.
Right.
Exactly.
So, yeah, and there's tons more. I guess I should also add the last group of fallacies that I kind of made up. I made a separate family is civil fallacies, because oftentimes in our culture we find people just don't even care if something's illogical.
I know that's becoming now that we live in this culture that values experience over reason.
Yep.
They will believe two completely contrary things, and they don't have any problem with it.
Yep,
I know.
It's infuriating.
Yeah.
And so once the students learn logic and they start pointing out these fallacies, they quickly realize, you know, I'm watching the news and no one cares about logic. No one's reasoning properly, and it can be somewhat disillusioning.
Yeah.
And so I created this group of fallacies called civil fallacies. So these are fallacies. I mean, they're not technically fallacies, but when someone is behaving in a way where they've done away with all logic and reasoning, they don't want to talk anymore. So what will they do? They'll talk over you. What will they do? They'll shut down, walk away. What will they do? They'll start cursing. That's the potty mouth fallacy, I call it. or the trolling fallacy, where instead of actually engaging in a person's argument, you're just trying to get a rise out of them to make them look bad. You know, and so people nowadays, because we're so far removed from reasoning and truth and valuing it, people just give right into just acting like jerks and thinking that's okay because so-and-so, you know, I don't agree with them, you know, or whatever. Or I can talk over you. I can call you names. And a lot of the toxicity in our culture today is a result of this. So
we're losing our civility.
And it's because we've lost our value for truth and our ability to think clearly and value that.
Wow, so well said.
Let me ask you this too. You know, you're teaching logic here in middle school. I mean, how do you get eighth graders excited? I mean, they're just in that period now where they're really they've been able to want to establish independence, and they're now starting to make their own arguments. I mean, my lower school kid is doing that right now with me. But I mean, how do you get them really excited about this subject?
That's a great question, and I love the question because I love the answer, and the answer is you don't have to. As soon as you start teaching them fallacies, they immediately light up because they know exactly what you're talking about. And they see them all the time. You just put a name on it, and it's almost like they need to be put in a cage stage because it's been revealed that they have the superpower. They can identify bad thinking, stinking thinking, we call it, fallacies, in everyday life all the time, dinner table, friends throughout school, different conversations.
Our parents always love it when the kids start having their logic class.
And so I have to send parents.
Turn it on their parents.
Yes, I have to send parents a rational self-defense guide and say, okay, there's one fallacy you need to be aware of, and that's special pleading. And when the scriptures say you need to honor your father and mother, and they say, no, I don't, because you're being irrational. Scriptures don't say that. That's special pleading.
It is a black and white issue in regards to needing to honor them.
Yes, right. Exactly. That's a command. Yes. Yeah, they have authority to command you. They don't have to give you any reasons whatsoever.
That's right.
So they love logic, and they thrive in it. A lot of them say it's their favorite class because it really is a tool that they have now. They can use the rest of their lives, and it's just so valuable and important in every subject. To every subject.
Yeah. So. We are quickly running out of time here, Brent.
Fast.
We had
yes.
so much that we wanted to talk with you about. We're going to have to really limit us. I think we've got time for maybe one more question for you. And maybe you could talk to us a little bit about why debate then at Liberty is so important.
Yeah. So one of the things that we try to do at Liberty is really integrate our logic and rhetoric curriculum so that logic, we're learning how to recognize and analyze another person's argument. And then rhetoric, we're trying to do that ourselves. Mm-hmm. But it's nice because we take logic first. So you can recognize the argument someone else's or the argument in someone else's points, analyze it, so that eventually you would learn how to make your own arguments that are rational and clear. And when it comes to debate, what we're trying to do is just make sure we're actually addressing the other person's argument. We're breaking down their argument faithfully, reproducing it faithfully, and saying, look, I see what you're saying. Are you saying this? Yes. Okay. Well, I disagree with this premise. Mm-hmm. You know, and we can be very specific. Yeah, and it's helpful to move forward from that.
And I just have to add, too, it really develops listening skills for the student because in the context of debate and argument, a lot of times we just want to say what we want to say because we want to get it out there to win the argument as opposed to really engaging.
Right.
Yeah,
you're almost not even listening to the other person because you're too busy thinking what you're going to say next.
Yes.
Yeah. And in a true debate, you have to listen. You're right. That's a really good point.
Yeah. And as I tell the students, when it comes to logic, there is no enemies, there are no friends. There are only teachers.
Yeah, you know, and
I guess we could end there.
Yes, well, we could go on, and we thank you, Brent Fisher, for joining
us here again,
and I think we're going to have you back again to talk about more with respect to this topic of logic. It's very important in our culture, and it is lacking today. So I thank you, Mark,
for
only joining us, but helping put together this show,
and
we thank our listeners as well, and we hope you join us again next week at AM 1280 The Patriot, 6 p.m., Education Nation.